When I was coming up in northern Vermont, no one expected much of Thad Stevens. I was smart enough, did very well in school, but I had a lot to overcome. My father took to drink, couldn't keep a job, and eventually abandoned his family. Later, he got himself killed in the War of 1812. My mother is left with raising four children and working as a laundress. She could barely keep food on the table. And then there was the club foot I was born with, causing not a small amount of guilt for my parents and shame for me. I was striking, handsome, could get the attention of any girl I chose. All in all, I may have despaired of finding a sweetheart, but never that I would one day rise above my life circumstances. Too little notice was made in Vermont of my clear determination to march through life, same as a man with matching feet. When I got myself admitted to Dartmouth College, nearly everybody around figured I'd run into a wall there. Those rich boys would have none of me and send me hobbling back home. I discuss only with my Lord the torment I endured to finish my schooling. I sure didn't discuss it with any of my childhood acquaintances. After school, I chose not to return to Vermont, but headed south to York, Pennsylvania. In Vermont, they didn't hear of me until the newspapers began to write about this knife-tongued congressman from Pennsylvania, Thaddeus Stevens. I heard they especially liked to read what I had to say about Southern slave owners who were trying to take over Washington. But I'm getting ahead of my story. I was 23 when I began teaching at the Academy in York and reading law at night. I calculated I needed 1 year to ready myself, and when that time period was up, I presented myself for the bar examination. And the County Bar Association turned around and passed a resolution barring anyone from the examination who had not studied law full time. They sought to thwart me because I would not chummy up to any of the big lawyers in York. Just wasn't in me to lick boots. I went right back at them. I went across the line to Bel Air, Maryland. To get my law degree there, all I needed was the time to get there, the answers to a few questions, and two bottles of Madeira wine for the examining judge. I hung my shingle in Gettysburg in 1816. Being new in town and to the law, my cases were few. I even lost my first capital case. Here's the true story. I argued my client could not be guilty because he was insane. Unfortunately, the jury had never heard of such a defense. Despite the verdict, I did earn a reputation for cleverness and audacity. Clients flocked to me. By 1821, I was one of the leading lawyers in Pennsylvania. That was the year one Norman Bruce walked into my office. In hindsight, I wish on that day I had been visiting friends in York and never laid eyes on this Maryland slave owner. It seems Norman Bruce had leased a slave, Charity Butler, to a seamstress who made frequent trips into Pennsylvania, and every time she took Charity. Well, Bruce never knew Charity to be rebellious or even ornery. But after 3 years of passing back and forth from Maryland to Pennsylvania, one day Charity announces that she's free and she weren't gone back to Maryland. This enslaved woman then had the gall to talk on the law. The slave owner had come to me to find out something. If a slave resides in Pennsylvania for a total of 6 months, can that slave go free? Charity had counted every time she came to Pennsylvania, and when the total reached 186 days, she sat on a bench outside the millinery store and would not budge. Didn't run nor hide. Nope. This slave got herself a wage job in the millinery store. I informed the slave owner that his Charity had stated Pennsylvania law correctly. Now, I should have left his counsel at that. After all, I was from the live free or die state. My own hard-scrabble childhood should have made me feel something for this poor woman. Lord, she was, in her way, just as clever and determined as I was. But I took the case, fought it up to the state Supreme Court, and as was my habit, I won it. My argument was simple. Unless a single visit exceeded 6 months, the slave could not claim freedom. I didn't talk much about the Charity Butler case once the court ruling came down. I just retired to my office and sat watching the last of the champagne bubbles dissolve in the glass I could not bring to my lips. The uneasiness I had felt, even before the ruling, was in fact the realization that I had lost. I was lost. If I was not now one of the powerful who plagued the defenseless, I was maybe even worse, their willing instrument. It can be stated that by the time I put the cork back into the bottle and swung my ungainly club foot onto the sidewalk and into the night air, I was walking as a committed abolitionist. No man changes completely through one despairing night. A man does not lose himself to winning, heedless of the terrible, swift consequences of his victory, and of a sudden, reverses nature. The word spread from mouth to ear, station master to runaway, Negro to Negro. If ever you are caught and jailed in Pennsylvania, there is a lawyer who will come to your aid. You will know him by his limp.